Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Invites us to stop and enter into the present moment. In the present moment, clear awareness abides. And in this clarity, we can set ourselves free from the tyranny of an overactive mind. An overactive mind can wander all over the place, awfulizing, strategizing, what-if-ing, and then can be actual hell for the one who is caught up in the tyranny of the mind. But through the simple act of ringing a bell and stopping, it's as if we enter into a field of awareness. Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, he says there is a field. And when our soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. In fact, they oftentimes get in the way. Even each other does not exist. In other words, there aren't two. There isn't me and you, there is only that. And he says, I will meet you there. And so this month of February, we're going to meet in a field of love. And we're going to explore those gifts of love together. In the science of mind, we do prayer differently than other religions. We recognize that there is this one life. And then we say that life is within me. And then we make declarative statements with gratitude, and so it is. But the fallacy of that system basically puts God within ourselves. And the truth is that we're in God, that we are in love, that all there is love. This vast field of love. It's like the wave realizing, oh my God, I'm the ocean of love. I'm not the separate wave looking for another wave to fall in love with. So there's my wave and your wave, and together we make love. No, there is only the one life, the one love, revealing itself endlessly throughout all creation. And then when this love awakens, the love of the one within, as we're learning in our class, we see the love everywhere. We see it on the little worm that's on the plant in the living room. Huh? And instead of saying, I'm going to squish this little worm because it's an inconvenience, we say, I see you, my friend. And it's okay if you hang out on the leaf of the ficus tree. And we begin to see life differently. And so this Sunday, I invite this presence that we all share to awaken within. It's in the science of mind that they say all is love and all is law. And then in the teaching, they say let love lead the way. And then let the law make the way possible. And so when we look within and discover this love, it's not personal to you and me. It's deeply impersonal, and it's everywhere revealed. On my Zen calendar, there is a picture of a penguin sitting on her little chick. And right next to the chick was a baby penguin. And when I look at that photograph of the penguins, I see the love. The love of the fledgling for its mother and the love of the mother for its fledgling. And then if you telescope out, you see all the penguins sitting on their little egg with their little chicks. And you realize that you're experiencing a field of love. And the very fact that I can experience it looking through human eyes shows me that we're not separate. It's a felt awareness. This one life, this one love. And it's awakening in time and space through you and myself. So this Sunday we open to these gifts of love in a curious sort of way. We stay fully present, knowing that, as Ernest Holmes says, the thing we're looking for, we're looking with. And so if we are looking for love, which everyone truly is, we have to realize that it's the love within that's looking for itself. And we are so fortunate when we see it, perhaps in a four-legged, or in the birds that fly in the sky, or in a beautiful tree that might be stately standing in our yard, so gracious. And then you look at the tree and you realize the tree lives in you, and you live in the tree, you're not separate. And you listen to the song of the birds and you realize that that song lives within you. And so we come together in this vibration of love, not a love that attaches, that grasps, that tries to possess. Because if we love the air that we breathe, and we want to put it in a container and say, it's my air, because I love this air, well, then we are depriving the world of the same thing that we love. And so what if we could expose ourselves to a bigger understanding of truth, a universal truth that is not bound by the limited construct of the mind and the conclusions that we've drawn, but we open to the mystery of love. There are so many who are making their transition on the planet, and I truly know that they're still here. They're not in form. But spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And as the Sufis say, when we come, when we incarnate on this planet, we bring light and love. And when we leave this planet, we take the light with us and we leave the love behind. And so the invitation is to feel that love that's left behind, that's still here. And the more you can, you realize it's a living love. It's not just a conceptual love. No, it's an actual field of love that is always there, nurturing us, supporting us, enhancing our experience in every moment. And so we rest in this place of discovery. Today we're going to explore the teachings on love through the master teacher Thich Nhat Hanh. And throughout this month, we will explore teachings on love, the great Sufi mystic Rumi, who said, what you think of love are but subtle degrees of domination and servitude. He says, but true love comes fully formed like the moonlight in the window. He says, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. And so could we explore what a love like that might be like? So we rest in this question, how would love reveal herself in this sacred holy instant of now, so that we might understand its gifts, its mystery, its teachings, and then let it lead the way and allow spiritual law to make the way possible. With cheerful expectancy, radical curiosity, and a deep fascination, we embrace this holy instant of now, knowing that we will be guided and revealed to in unique and beautiful ways. And so when you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes, be here now. I love looking out at all your faces, and I feel the love out here. You know, love is an energy, not a commodity, it's a verb. And so when Dr. Ernest Holmes said, all is love and all is law, he's pointing to something so big. And we'd say God is love in the book of John, God is love. So if God is all there is, well then all there really is love. So could we have an understanding of that in a much vaster way of seeing it, instead of a limited perception of this idea that love needs to be external? And of course, it's nice to have an external love that we can cherish, but ultimately we know that love sets us free. It doesn't hold us bound. In the Course in Miracles, there's only one taboo. And I love it when they have only one taboo. The one taboo is do not have a special love. Because in oneness, how could you make only one item the source of that love when love is everywhere, revealing itself through multiplicity? And so then we can stretch our perception. And this whole game of being human is about perception. You know, we once thought in narrow, conceptual, contractual conclusions of doctrine and ideas. You're born in sin, you need Jesus' blood to save. And then when all those things fall away, well then what's left? There is this field of awareness that is awakening in time and space. In Buddhism, they call it the Buddha consciousness. In Christianity, they call it the Christ consciousness. In Hinduism, they call it the Atman. And they say the Atman and the Brahman are one. Brahman is this creative intelligence of the universe, and the Atman is the soul, which is our true nature, this invisible something that was never born and never dies. And who knows, we might have had many, many, many incarnations in this human experience, and maybe other forms too, in order for this something to evolve and grow on planet Earth. And one thing I truly know is that we are evolving as a species. Hopefully, you're here to evolve like I am, and not stay bound in the limited idea of who we used to be. Trey found a show on HBO Max that we started to watch last night that's profoundly disturbing but very revealing, and it's called Through the Eyes of Tammy Faye. And it's a movie about Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker and the Pete 700 Club in the 80s and Jerry Falwell, and you know the whole scenario. And it's that narrow way of thinking. And through the eyes of a Tammy Faye, when they're condemning the gays, she says, well, they're God's children too. And they say, who got her in here? What Bible is she reading? And so from the mouths of Tammy Faye, they're saying, could God be big enough to embrace all her children and not just the Christians that are narrow in the evangelical way of thinking? And as disturbing as it was, in a sense, it's liberating. So could we as a species evolve enough to know that the trees are sacred, that the air that we breathe is sacred? And when you do anything to the mother, to the planet, you're really doing it to yourself. Well, it's a whole different way of approaching life, isn't it? We're teaching this wonderful class called Awakening the World, and it's from one of my teachers, Llewellyn Van Lee. He's a Sufi. And when I studied with him, as a religious scientist, you work with building a strong consciousness and using spiritual law to manifest a greater sense of living. But the very first thing I heard him say up there in Rhinebeck, New York, at Omega Institute, and I'm sitting in a large room on a cushion in front of this teacher, and he's sitting in a chair. The very first thing he says, it's not about you. It has never been about you. It's about God. It's all about God. And he says, and when you serve the one, well, then the one serves you. We're not here to have the one serve us and give us what we want. Right? So it's a whole different way of seeing it. So could we be in service to this divine love, to this peace that passes all understanding? Could we offer our lives in service, our creativity? When I was studying my master's thesis in dance, it wasn't about being a dancer. What was happening to me was I was exploring the creative process and how something from this vast something was awakening in me with spontaneity, with originality, with an organic sense that I can tap into something that's beyond the David Leonard person. And that's always been the case. And then you begin to study William Butler Yeats, and he says, when I hear these poems, they come fully formed, and by the time I start to write it down, it's gone. Or you study Mozart, and he says, I hear the music from the spheres, and it comes through me. When I hear Bob playing George Winston, I realize it's not really Bob playing. There's something using his fingers, and you can feel there's something happening there. So could we offer our curiosity to the mystery of this life that we all share? I want to share with you this little book, Thich Nhat Hanh. I've got, he wrote maybe 100 books, and he died on January 22nd, and he was one of my teachers. And you know, the very first thing he said is that all of life is a transmission. He said, there is a transmitter, there is a receiver, and there is that which is transmitted. And he says, your parents do nothing less than live in you. He says, your teachers do nothing less than live in you. And so as he came to the end of his life, I realized that he lives within me. And he's been with me ever since January 22nd, kind of haunting me with his message of oneness. And I realized how profound it is and how it's an evolutionary step from religious science to this. Religious science isn't consciously evolving into oneness. It has to evolve into oneness. Because we teach oneness, it says in the science of mind. Well, how are you going to know oneness if it's about you? It's not about you. It's never been about you. It's about the oneness coming through. And so as he aged and as he evolved, he died at 95, he says in this lovely book on love, he says, I'm standing at the tree and I realize the tree lives in me and I live in the tree. So he coined a phrase, interbeing. There's one life and it's all coexisting within all of us. We're not separate. There's a wonderful documentary. It's called The Octopus Teacher. Have any of you seen it? I mean, I swear to God, I learned more from an octopus than I did from a human being. And how am I learning it? Through his example, not through his words, not through his doctrine, not through his message, but through how he lives, or she lives her life. I think she was a female. So in this lovely little book on true love, he talks about the four, what does he call it? The four immeasurable minds. And he says, in order to know true love, you need to activate these four immeasurable minds. And this is how he puts it. The first one is loving kindness. That would be like having a friend, like Emily and I. That's the first form of love. You're all my friend. Loving kindness. That's the first form of love. The second immeasurable mind would be the one of compassion. The young boy who was trapped in Morocco awakened so much compassion on the planet. Could we have compassion for things, a plant that needs to be watered? You know, last week it was so disturbing. I came into the center and someone had stolen the plant out of the platter that I had put in there 2 weeks ago. It was a little magnolia that had planted herself in my yard. I carried her in. Adam planted her in the pot. I watered her for 2 weeks, and I came here last Sunday, and she was gone. And I felt hurt. I felt sad for the plant that I had nurtured for so long. There was a little anger, like, who in the hell would do something like that? And then I came on Wednesday to the center to pick up the mail, and lo and behold, the plant was back in the pot. And I thought, how the heck did that happen? But then I said, don't think too much. Somehow miracles happen. I watered it and I talked to it. And I said, somehow this thing came out and into my life. So he talks about the third level, that's compassion. The third level of a measurable mind is joy. Joy is such a sacred thing. When you have joy, Jody's little daughter, Stephanie, is giving birth to a little girl in 9 weeks. My niece in Maine is giving birth to her first child at the end of April. My other niece just recently had a miscarriage and she was deeply saddened by it. And she's in her mid to late 30s. Well, she found out she's pregnant again with her second child. So we have all these beautiful babies coming on the planet. And I have to tell you, it fills me with joy because I see there's hope for our planet when we can bring new energy, new life, new consciousness in to this sacred space. So Thich Nhat Hanh says, with every breath, your cells are dying and your cells are giving birth. There really is no death. All of life is death and birth. So whereas we shared there were several deaths in our revealing service, there are also several births. So what if spirit has a way of recreating itself endlessly anew? And my twin sister, her youngest son, is very meticulous. And she and I both think that he's the reincarnation of our father. Our father was so meticulous that in his desk, his paper clips were all lined up. Her son is similar to that. My father got a scholarship in college as a baseball player. My nephew is like the pro baseball player. So here we have this kind of running thing. We think that's dad. Now, maybe Jane will come back in one of your grandchildren, Jody, I don't know. But the last one of these measurable minds is the one of equanimity. I spoke about this last Sunday on the exquisite balance. Equanimity basically says is that it's all God. And so the suffering is God as well as the joy is God. So could we bring in what Emily went through with equanimity, could we face that not as a bad thing, but as a rite of passage in a way? Sometimes we have to go to the darkness to find the light. Sometimes we have to have a sacred wound in order to heal. And so when you have equanimity in everything, well, then you can have equanimity in love too. My first lover, it was kind of a disastrous relationship. It started my freshman year in college. It ended my senior year when he ran off with another man who ends up being my husband for 46 years. Strange how that worked out. And his birthday was this week. And I found myself reflecting on that old relationship, not with bitterness, but with gratitude that I had the consciousness to evolve out of kind of a dysfunctional relationship into a more intimate relationship with myself so that I could then be prepared for a healthy one when that showed up in my life. So could we find the equanimity even in those that have been the button pushers, even those that we somehow hold out of our heart, could we know that they're also part of the oneness and that we need them to, you know, bring change upon the planet? Well then, you know, in oneness, everyone's embraced. Rumi talks about this being human is like a guest house, and that's your consciousness. And come knocking at the door of your guest house are all your fears and your anger and your judgments. And he says, invite them all in. He says, they may be coming to clean out your house, your consciousness. Get curious, what are they showing you? And if you can smile at them and say, thank you for sharing, there's little fearful Freddy, thank you, Freddy. I know that these are fearful times on the planet. I appreciate you there. And so then we embrace all the exiled parts of ourselves, and then we can do it for the planet as well. So Thich Nhat Hanh is a big advocate of this idea, when the shadow shows up, you invite the shadow in. So here's this equanimity thing. He says, if your love has attachment, discrimination, prejudice, or clinging in it, well then it's not true love. It's not true love. Love is here to set you free. I love the metaphor of a butterfly. If the butterfly lands on your hand and you look at it and say, that's my beautiful butterfly, it belongs to me, but I don't want it to go anywhere, so I'll clench my hand. Well, that's not what you do with a butterfly, is it? The butterfly lands and it makes love with you, and then it flies to Michael, and then it flies to Emily. And that's what love does. We can't possess it. We can't attach to it. If you have children, we set them free. So he goes on to say, it's not true love if there's attachment. And he says, the wisdom of equality, which is upeksha, is the ability to see everyone as equal, not discriminating between ourselves and others. In unity consciousness, in oneness, there is a natural diversity. Nancy and Lee gave me a little drawing. I have it in my office, and it's a beautiful little, I don't know if you did the art yourself, but there was a quote of Richard Rohr, and it says, this universe doesn't create uniformity. Nowhere in the heavens, in the sky, in the sea, do they praise uniformity. They praise individuality, uniqueness. So could we know ourselves as uniquely individualized expressions of that one life, not here to conform to a system or a belief system or how we're supposed to do things like other people? It was Emerson that said, consistency and conformity of the hobgoblin of little minds and the divine of statesmen. So could we let go of that consistency and conformity and be a radical thinker, a new way of approaching life, not from my beliefs, but there's something greater that's awakening, and I want to be a part of that. He's pointing to that. So he says, without upeksha, which is equanimity, he says, there is no self and there is no other. There is no David and you is other. There's only this one life. Now that takes a pretty big stretch, doesn't it? That doesn't mean that you're not still a unique expression of God's life, but it's really the local mind goes away, and this non-local mind, this infinite intelligence begins to awaken. This infinite love begins to awaken. Not a love that wants to possess somebody. I was talking to Michael about, is he dating again? And I realized that he's finding the love within himself, and everyone is his lover. It was Ernest Holmes says, when love awakens, he says, then love will see only love wherever it looks. And second sentence is, and only this love will see love. When I see Chris walking in here, it's strange, he's my neighbor, and he started coming here fairly recently. But every morning I would get up with my old dog, Bert, and he was so compromised at the end. It was truly the most sacred experience to help him get down the stairs and up the stairs. Initially, I resented it, and I thought, I can't lift this dog. But after I saw Jody lift him up the steps, I thought, if she can lift him, I surely can lift him. And then it was a privilege to take care of it. And so when I see Chris walking in, I see Bert walking in with it. And it's so funny, after Bert made his transition, Chris told me that all his passwords are now Bert 007, Bert something else. And I thought, you know, so he goes on, even if it's a password.
It's going to be changing.
Without protection, your love may become possessive. A summer breeze can be very refreshing, but if you try to put that summer breeze in a can so that you can have it entirely for yourself, he says, well, then the breeze will die. And he said that our beloved, which is everywhere, is the same way. The beloved is in the cloud. The beloved is in the breeze. The beloved is in the flower. If you imprison the beloved in a tin can, he'll certainly die. So this is this almost painfully simple but profoundly deep idea that it's all God, that it's all sacred. And as Meister Eckhart said, he who can see God in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. Adam was telling me that he was with a friend one time and they were a little bit stoned. And they were looking at a leaf. And as they looked at the leaf, he said, I began to see the whole universe in the leaf. And then I handed the leaf to the friend and he saw the whole universe in the leaf. Now, did you need to get stoned to see that? No. But when you have a perception that it's all sacred and the universe is showing up in a leaf, well, then something is awakening. It's everywhere, showing itself. So he's pointing to that thing. If your love has attachment, discrimination, and prejudice or clinging, it's not true love. So our beloved is the same. He's in the cloud, the flower, the breeze, and if you imprison him in a tin can, he will die. True love allows you to preserve your freedom and the freedom of your beloved. That is what equanimity means. For love to be true love, it must contain compassion, joy, and equanimity, the three immeasurable minds. Inner being, nature of the four immeasurable minds, when the Buddha told the Brahman, the man, to practice these four immeasurable minds, he was talking about how we can experience love in our lives. And then he talks about how the ancestors live in you. He lives in us. The awareness that he has lives in us. The expectations that he has live in us. Who are your ancestors? Jesus is an ancestor. You know, Jesus said, love one another as I loved you. He said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you've seen the love in me, you've seen the divine love. He would say, I of myself do nothing. It's this love within that does the work. So he recognized there is this power greater than all of us. He said, there's only one law, to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might, and to love your neighbor as yourself. So he's pointing to that the outer is the self just as much as this invisible something that we call presence or God is ourselves. In the class on Awakening the World, Llewellyn von Lee talked about the lumina natura, which is the light within nature. And then he talks about the lumina dei, which is the light within ourself, the light within God, and he says they're the same light. And so what that says to me is that this is all the face of God looking at me, your beings of light and love, and yet you have a container. This container will go someday, as containers do, but this love and light is an eternal love and light. So do we need to worry about the time when the container goes, or can we know that when the container goes, the love and the light are still there? They're just going on in different dimensions. He's still here, and he's still teaching. So he goes on to this chapter, he says, you and the object of your love cannot be two. They're as much you as you are yourself. So when you look up here, you're seeing Bert sitting here, to be very honored. You're seeing baby Speck, who was the love of his life. She was a wild child. You know, you're seeing my mother, who had this tendency to touch people. She was very embracing. She used to say, Scotty, people are deprived of touch. And so if I touch you, that's my mother coming through. My father lives in me. My father said, question everything that doesn't make sense. He says, don't accept things on blind faith. Whereas my mother said, you accept things on blind faith. That's what a good Christian does. He said, question everything. So I chose to follow my father's path on questioning if something doesn't make sense, could I be willing to let that go in order to open to something that is really awakening within me. So that's at this stage of life. I only want the truth. And the Greek word for truth means that which unhides itself. So the truth is there, but it's hidden oftentimes under scripture. And you have to have a sleuth-like way of looking at things in order to have this awakening. He goes on to say, continue until you see yourself in the cruelest person on the earth. Remember, there's only one here. In the child that's starving or trapped in a cave. See yourself in the political prisoners that are on the planet. And practice until you can recognize yourself in everyone and in everything. In the supermarket, at the street corner, in a concentration camp, in a leaf, in a dewdrop. Meditate until you see yourself in a speck of dust and also in the distant galaxies. It's all you. Now, this is a book on love, and he's asking you to see yourself in everything and to discover that love is right there. It's not a love that possesses, because that's not love, that's attachment. The Sadhguru that I study with, he says, you in the Western world use this word love way too flippantly. And he says, what you say about love is mostly attachment. But he says, love is not attachment. He says, love is really the deepest acceptance of what is. Even the painful stuff. Love accepts what is and then navigates. And sometimes it has us navigate out of troubled places so that we can find homeostasis, balance, peace again. Have you ever been in a turbulent relationship, like my first one was? And it was love that navigated me out of that. And then at that time when I was so young and fickle, I thought I had to find a replacement for that dysfunctional love affair. But through grace, it had me find the love within myself so that when the love awoke within me, I could actually see the love in other, and we met in a field of love, not in a field of attachment, but in a field of belonging to something much bigger. And that love is still guiding me through every encounter. So here's Thich Nhat Hanh at the very end of this. He says, being the rock, being the gas, being the mist, being the mind, being all this energy, traveling among the galaxies at the speed of light, you have come to me, my beloved. Now, isn't that amazing? Look out in the universe and see that this is the beloved that's all around you. Look at the leaf and the mist and the moth and the penguin. This is all the beloved. It's all the beloved. Wow. Why bother with the human form? They're far too complex. Get yourself a leaf, a rock, and a butterfly. He says, you have manifested yourself. He's talking to the beloved, talking to my love. You have manifested yourself as trees, as grass, as butterflies, as single-celled beings, and as chrysanthemums. But the eyes with which you look at me this morning tell me that you have never died. Your smile invites me into the game whose beginning no one knows, the game of hide and seek. My friend Helen Street played the game. She called it the God game. And she would look at someone like maybe a homeless person on the street, and she'd say, God, I know you're in there too. And she would look at, I hate to use the word asshole, the asshole across the street, she'd say, oh God, I know you're in there too. And that's playing hide and seek. What if it's all the presence revealing itself in everything? He's trying to get us to that realization. So he says, oh green caterpillar, you are solemnly using your body to measure the length of the rose branch that grew up last summer. Everyone says that you, my beloved, were just born this spring. He's talking to the caterpillar. But tell me, how long have you been around? Why wait until this moment to reveal yourself to me, carrying with you that smile which is so silent and so deep? Oh, caterpillar, he says. Oh, sun. Oh, moons. Oh, stars. You flow out as love revealed, and I witness you. You know, it was in the Quran where it asked the question, am I not your Lord? Which is this divine love, to which we, the creation, say, yes, we witness you. So could we witness this love reveal itself everywhere? In the way a mother bird takes care of her little baby in the nest? In the way a gardener tends their garden? You know, when the winter comes, I take the house plants that are out there in the yard, and I've got so many plants, and I bring them into the house. They're in the dining room, they're in the living room, they're in the guest bedroom, they're in the den, they're in the mudroom, they're in the greenhouse window upstairs, they're everywhere. And I have overflowing plants, so then they're in the basement with grow lights. And they're getting kind of long and leggy, so it's January, February, I'm down there tending the plants, and I'm cutting the overgrown ones and putting them in pots so that they can create roots. I'm having more babies out of my babies, it's interesting. I'm planting seeds and the seedlings are growing. And then, as fate would have it, I'd find a little green worm, I was telling Chris, on one of the plants that I was cutting back. I didn't have the heart to throw the green worm and squish it, because he was a little, he was living off the plant. So I let him live on the plant, saying, there's time for you later when you go outside to cope with the birds that might eat you. And so there's a sense of interconnectedness to even the smallest of things, as your own self. And then you begin to explore, what are the teachings on love for me? The last week of this month, we're going to explore the gifts of love by the mystic, what is his name? Joel Goldsmith, The Infinite Way. And he was a famous Unity minister in New York City. And he wrote a little book called The Gifts of Love. And so could we be teachable enough to let go of our preconceived idea of what this is? You know, it's Valentine's Day, and it's wonderful to have your amore and all that. But could we know a greater sense of love, a joie de vivre, a love for life? When I was struggling to find my identity, Finn will appreciate this, I studied with a man named Joseph Campbell, and his one message to his students was to follow your bliss. Now, the Sanskrit word for bliss is ananda, satchitananda. Sat is consciousness, awakening to bliss. So what if our consciousness could awaken to this bliss, this thing that we love, and allow that to lead the way, let love lead the way. And so when someone was struggling in our revealing service, in their mind, what am I going to do, what am I going to do? And I said to them, just listen to your heart. Listen to that calling of your soul. And maybe it'll say something impractical like, God, I'm a dancer, and a dancer dances. And then do you have the courage to take a class in dance and discover what was the dance showing you? The dance was saying, turn within and discover there's something that's wanting to awaken. Just by listening to the bliss, we can find a direction that ignites our soul. And then love is leading the way, and then the law will make the way possible. You know, if I was in charge, I would never be in Alabama, because I said, that's the only place I'll never go to. If I were in charge, I would never be with John Stoddard, because I said, he is the only one that I will never, ever consider, because he broke up my first relationship, and I've been with him for 46 years. The other thing I said I will never, ever do is become a minister, because religion is the opiate of the people, and you won't ever see me in a church. So it really shows that I don't really know anything. This divine intelligence knows how to move us and create for us once we let go of the idea that we're in control. And then we get to surrender to something so vast and so big, and it's continuing to do me. Because remember, we're in it. We want to say that God's within us, but we're within this divine intelligence. Now that's like the drop awakening to the ocean. Now Rumi was there, and Rumi through his poetry would say, oh drop, oh Emily drop, give it up. The drop for the ocean? Oh, to be wooed by the ocean. The drop for the ocean? No question. So when you know yourself in this ocean of love, and all swimming in that ocean, Ruby says, ends in drowning, that basically says that there's no you then, as separate from an Emily. There is just this ocean of love flowing throughout creation, and it interspirits. And as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, we inter are. And then we offer the gift of our awareness, the gift of our enthusiasm, the gift of our attentiveness, our action, our words, our intention to the world as a fashioning factor, not a victim of what's been done in the past, as Tammy Faye showed in Through the Eyes of Tammy. She was something that awoke within the Christian community where gay people were finally accepted. Isn't it ironic? Her oldest son is now gay, and he's creating evangelical teachings that are inclusive instead of exclusive. All because someone stood up and said, that dog don't hunt no more, Jerry Falwell. It just takes one voice that sees through the aberration and can hold on to the truth. I want to conclude with a poem by Mark Nepo, who's also one of my heartfelt teachers, because he survived cancer twice. And in that, now we can say that's a bad thing, but it was an awakening thing. It took him to touching death to really touch what doesn't die. And then he came back with a perception that is so all-inclusive, and he entitles this poem, In Love of the World. Now, we're not separate from the world. And so I invite you to take this, and then we'll lead it into a meditation. Raul, you can go back to the bell, and when I finish this, we'll ring the bell. It's called In Love with the World. Now, for those of you who've been here a while, when this love awakens, there's awakening within. Well, there's first a waking up. The love wakes up in the creation. Then the love wakes within and meets the darkness, the unhealed parts. And then the love awakens without to the world. It reaches out. So first this love awakens, then it heals the stuff within ourselves, and then it starts to reach out into the world. And here's his poem, In Love with the World. He says, there's no end to love. He says, that place opens like the fist that is no longer strong enough to stay closed. And as it opens and the ache returns, you say, thank you, God. The sweet and sudden ache that lets me know that I am alive, the sweet ache of being alive. The rain is misting on my face, and I feel the presence caressing me. What majesty of cells assembles around this luminous presence that moves around as me. We're in it. How is it that I'm still here? I've had cancer twice. They said I shouldn't be here. Everything touched, each breath, each glint of light, each pain in my gut is cause for my praise. Remember that, Emily. Each of that is cause for my praise. I pray to keep falling in love with everyone that I meet, with every child's eye, with every fallen being that needs me to help them get up. Like a worm that's cutting in, that's been cut in two, the heart only grows another heart. When the cut in my mind heals, I grow another mind. Birds migrate, and caribou circle the cold top of the world. Perhaps we migrate between our love and our suffering, making our wounded joyous cries alone and then together. Alone and then together. Oh, praise the soul's migration. I fall and then I get up. I run from you and then I look for you. I am again in love with the world, waking up, waking in, and waking out. And love is the work of my soul. So, Raul, you want to give us a mindfulness bell? Thank you. The invitation to stop once again. And to open to what is. Observe the deafening silence. Silence is the language of God. And so as we breathe into the silence, and symbolically we turn off the radio of the mind that wants to chat, then we rest as peace. We rest as life breathing, the sacred breath. Breathing in, I breathe in, and breathing out, I smile. And so then the smile of life that we find within ourselves, we start seeing reflected in the world. Have you noticed when you smile at someone, they smile back at you? On my mantle in my dining room, there is a beautiful photograph of Etika Luckett, and she's holding up a mobile of flying turtles that I gave her. And she's looking into the camera and she's smiling. She's no longer on the planet. And right next to her is a photograph of Bert Speck running at the dog park. And Bert's smiling at Speck and she's smiling at him. And I find myself looking at these smiling faces. And above that is a bowl that was painted when I first came to Huntsville by the congregation at the time. And it's a bowl of smiling faces. I guess I smile a lot. And I feel the smile of the universe looking at me. And it makes me smile. So the invitation is to see life with fresh eyes. And the teachings of love start right there within our own heart. By recognizing through compassion what might need to be held and seen. A young boy, or a father asked his young son, this is a story in the book, the father asked the son, "What do you want for your birthday, my son?" And the boy said, "I just want you, Dad. I just want you to be here." And in that holy instant, the father realized that, could I be a space for him, a space of love? Not throwing material things at him and think that's enough, but to be the arms that would hold him and the eyes that would see him and the ears that would hear him. And so what if the greatest gift of love we can bring is our own presence to this holy instant of now? And when an old dog needs help standing up, and he looks at you with his sad eyes, you consider it a privilege, you know, to lift him up. And when he falls down and he can't walk anymore, you lift him up again. And he looks at you and says, "Well, thank you. I needed that help." And you'd say, "It's a privilege." Because love is meeting love. So we rest. We rest in compassion. We rest in love itself and friendship. We rest in joy, the joie de vivre, the joy of life. And we rest in equanimity, the beautiful feeling of recognizing that it's all good and it's all God and it's all here for us. All of it. And so when our most vicious enemy should arise in our consciousness, we smile at them. And we open ourselves and say, I hear you. And when those tyrants from within our mind and our heart want to rant and rave about yesterday, we say, yesterday ended last night. And now I forgive you and I forgive myself and I forgive all past experience. Forgiving you and forgiving myself, I am free. I am free. And so this love sets us free of our own self-inflicted nonsense, and we smile again. So I invite you to take another deep breath. Exhale into the holy instant of now. Feel the love that is calling you. Feel the life that is calling you. And say, yes, this life belongs to you. I am open and ready to offer myself in service to this love, a love that isn't separate, but a love that is within and all around, and I rest in that love, in that light, and in that possibility of the one that longs to be revealed with every breath. So I invite you now to say with me the heart salutation, which says to this divine presence within and all around, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the radiant presence of the One.
You are the
radiant presence of the One. Revealed everywhere in the world. Even in the galaxies.
Even in the microorganisms under the earth.
A creative life unfolding. We witness you. We celebrate you. We bow to you. Let your light shine through all of us so that we might see it.
Let your light shine through all of us so that we might see it.
Being the light. Being the light. Being the light. Nur ala nur. Light upon light. The light within me bows to the light within you. And in that space, there is only one. The love within me bows to the love within you. And in that space, there is only love. And only love sees love. We open to the mystery of the gifts of this incredible presence that we all share. And may we open our eyes now, bow to the sacred moment. Thank you for coming. We have a directory in the other room. Jody Rutenberg is putting that together. And all is well. Thanks for sending me your ties, y'all. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.